and said, the question is not what you look at, but what you see. So I want to give you some observations, and what I'd like to do, Ricky, is really address some of the questions you raised. Though I must say I was very, very impressed with the two presentations. They were outstanding. They were that wonderful marriage of opportunity and purpose, which we don't see all the time. So both in terms of the city and Columbia, that's wonderful. Three observations. Observation number one is the urbanization, the urban age we talk about, of course, is both a byproduct and a precondition for our global economy, and it's part of the new economy. The reality of our new economy, however, is that it relies, as Sean partially alluded to, on disparities. In the United States, for example, 11 of the 20 fastest growing job categories are in the service sector, each of which pay less than 2 times minimum wage. Our economy relies on the service sector, and Michael sort of referred to that. I would suggest that if these urban areas prosper, the agglomeration economies that make these urban areas prosper will create even more and more disparities. The challenge in the housing sector is, as long as we consider housing a merit good, that is something that is important, we will see more and more of a disconnect between those labor markets and the housing market, raising some of the issues that Michael talked about. Observation number one. Number two, this notion of urbanization, as Bruce suggested yesterday in his lunchtime remarks, is inextricably linked to decentralization and suburbanization. I think that's ongoing. One always exists with the other. I was looking through some data before I got here, and I have some statistics from early 20th century New York City at the height of urbanization in this country, the beginning of our urbanization. In 1905, within a 4-mile radius of City Hall, in 1905, 2.1 million people lived. 1925, 20 years later, we're still urbanizing. The population in that urban core went down to 1.7 million. So in the midst of sort of urbanization, in part stimulated by streetcars and the beginning of the subway system in New York, where people moved out, and they're still moving out, farther and farther out. I think, as I look at the cities, again, primarily in the United States, from my own experience, that suburbanization has become an escape valve for the middle class. As they seek security, as they think better schools, they move farther and farther out, and they have the ability to do so. The poor are left behind. The rich can choose to be left behind, but in the middle of enclaves. I do think one of the harsh realities we have to deal with, notwithstanding the, I hate to use the word social engineering, but notwithstanding our desire for integrated communities, I think many households and consumers have spoke very loudly and clearly. Diversity is a nice place to visit, but they don't want to live there. I think that is the reality of our sort of urban environment. Now, there are situations where that can be resisted. Sean mentioned what is an incredibly hot sort of housing market here. And in the environment he talks about, it may be possible to use some of the tightness, some of the heat of the housing market to accomplish some diversity. Though I suggest that will be limited and not nearly to the extent that we would like to see it. Third and last sort of observation about the role of government. I think on the one hand, as we talked about, I think, at the panel late yesterday afternoon, government is both potent and impotent. It is potent because it can help channel sort of market forces. It can't create market forces. It can't resist market forces, but it can channel market forces. Ironically, historically, most of that channeling has been at the expense of poor people, at the expense of affordable housing. I thought it was fascinating that Sean talked about the zoning changes and that sort of gauntlet you're going through to get zoning changes, because if you look at the New York City experience, zoning and land use controls bear some of the culpability for the lack of affordable housing here. So it's interesting now that we're looking at those same tools and asking ourselves, instead of being part of the problem, can it be part of the solution? I'd like to think it could be. The jury is still out whether that is the case overall. My last sort of corollary point, is I think one of the things that we don't pay enough attention to in this sort of urban age is the fact that cities are constantly changing, that they're not static. And our housing policies, our land use policies, must reflect this dynamism. The one, perhaps, difference of opinion I have with my good friend Bruce Katz is I think he probably understated the role of immigration as part of the impact of why cities have been sort of prospering. Cities traditionally have been incubators. The reality is, according to our research, at least in this country, the longer an immigrant is in the United States, the more likely they are to suburbanize. So how do we create environments for that sort of constant regeneration, understanding that we can never be static and never stop?